Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Feels good to be here as always. We want to welcome everyone checking in from the United States and all around the world. Really, really do appreciate all the love that you send this way. Hope everybody's had a good day, good week. And as always, we appreciate you for allowing us to be a part of your life. I got to tell you, about a week ago, I was in my dentist office and I had to get a root canal. And you know, you hear the expressions all the time, you know, when things are not going right, that, you know, like, I need that, like I need a root canal. And I've also heard people, you know, complain about how painful and how difficult, you know, root canals can be. But I got to tell you, I've been going to my dentist now for about 10 years or so, and I've known him even longer than that. And when he told me I had to have a root canal, I was like, oh, man, you know, I really didn't want to deal with that. He showed me a little video about what was going on. And actually, when he showed me the video, it cleared things up. But I was like, you know, am I really up for this? But I, you know, asked him to, as always, and he'll confirm this for you. I mean, I'm into, for those of you who know me, I'm into holistic living. I don't eat pork. I don't eat beef. You know, I do a little chicken and fish, and I'm just totally health conscious and that kind of thing. But when it comes to pain, I got to tell you, the holistic thing goes right out the window. And I tell him, you know, you need to medicate me to the fullest extent of the law, you know. And I don't know whether it has to do with being a man, being a baby or whatever, but he knows he's got to give me plenty of medication. And I got to tell you, you know, because of the kind of doctor that he is, and not because he's on the line right now. He's a very empathetic doctor. He is a very caring doctor, right disposition. And I've told people that before. You know, some of us, we really do, you know, we reach our calling, and this is his calling. And I have to tell you, once the medication sunk in, you know, it was fine. You know, it worked out really well, and I think part of it is because I trust them, and it's very important to, you know, trust your doctors and trust the people that you with. So I'm just letting him know that, I mean, he knew it. We had a discussion, but I'm letting you guys know, too, that it can be a positive experience because, you know, going to the dentist is always traumatic for folks. Folks just don't, you know, want to go to the dentist, but it's something that we have to do. And when I was sitting there, you know, the procedure took a little bit of time, and I was saying, you know, I've been meaning to have Dr. Stanislaus on for the longest time to, you know, to discuss dentistry, because as you know, here in Rainbow Soul, those of you who've been listening over a period of time, we're about promoting positive African-American images. That's what it's about, positive African-American guests, positive African-American images. Now, back in 1869, and they'll correct me if I'm wrong, if the producers didn't do the right research, but it seems as though the first African-American dentist to receive a degree in the United States, and he happened to graduate from the Harvard University Dental School, and that was in 1869, and his name was Dr. Robert Tanner. He is the first African-American dentist on record, and the first female African-American dentist is a woman by the name of Ida Gray, and she apparently got her certification in 1890. But they'll clear that up for us. They'll get that straight. Fast forward to 2011. We have some wonderful, wonderful caring dentists on the line this evening. We have Dr. Eugene Stanislaus, Eugene D. Stanislaus, Dr. Lisa Reed, and Dr. Lee Goss. Doctors, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks.
How are
Neil.
You?
I'm doing good. It's great to have you guys here. I want you to, enlighten the audience a little bit about dentistry. It'll be good for the kids who have not decided what they want to do in life, that there are other options, there are other things to do, you know, other than being an athlete or an entertainer, which not that there's anything wrong with that, because we're doing entertainment right now, being on this call, but that there are other options. What I'd like to do first is we're going to start with Dr. Stanislaus, and then we'll move on to Dr. Reed and then Dr. Gauze. Dr. Stanislaus, why don't you tell us how you got interested in dentistry, you know, where you went to school and how you decided to open up your practice, so on and so forth. Let the audience know a little bit about yourself.
Well, you know, my interest in dentistry really started probably when I was about 13 years old. You know, I'm one of five children, and my father, he's a retired dentist. In the time when I was about 13 or 14, my father was practicing solo dentistry. So he was the assistant, he was the bookmaker, he was the dentist, everything. And he used to always ask for one of my siblings or I to come and help him in the office, like during the summer or on a Saturday. So, you know, no one would go, and I would feel sorry for him. I'd say, man, someone has to go help Daddy. So I actually started going to the office to help him. And just as time went on, as I got a little older, I started observing some of the things he was doing as a dentist and just acquired an interest. And as I got older, just continued to work with him and really saw that dentistry was an art as well as a science. And, you know, I'm interested in art, interested in science. And so I just... that's the way my interest in dentistry developed, and by the time I was in college, you know, I knew I wanted to be a dentist. I went to NYU undergrad. I had got my bachelor's in biology, and I went to Stony Brook Dental School in Long Island, and when I graduated from dental school, I did a one-year general practice residency at Long Island College Hospital here in Brooklyn.
Wow. And I think the incredible part of your story is that you are a second-generation African-American dentist, and I think that that's absolutely incredible. Dr. Lisa Reed, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Well, I grew up in Barbados, and there you sort of have to decide from a pretty early age what you want to do, you know, when you grow up, because you take classes that sort of gear you in that direction. And I knew that in school, like Dr. Stanislaus, I liked art and I liked science, but I wasn't sure like how I could kind of combine those two things. And my dentist, who I'd been seeing probably from the time I was about 6 or 7 years old, had all this artwork in his office. And my mother told me that he was the one that had painted all of these paintings. And so I sat down one day and I kind of spoke to him, and he kind of enlightened me about the field, and I started visiting with him like on Saturdays and observing him while he worked on his patients. And I decided that, you know, this is probably a profession that I wanted to get into. So because I knew what I wanted to do, I applied to the University of Pennsylvania, and they had a 7-year combined undergrad and dental program. So I was able to do 3 years of undergrad at Penn and then 4 years in their dental school. And during the time that I was in dental school, I had a clinic instructor who was, I thought, just an amazing clinician. And he was such a perfectionist about everything that he did, and I wanted to be just like him. And he had done a 3-year residency in prosthodontics after dental school. And so I decided to follow in his footsteps, and I completed that residency at the University of Iowa. And so that's my story.
And it's a beautiful story, beautiful story. Dr. Gauze, you're next.
Well, I guess my story is a little bit different in that, similar but different. I guess the similarity with Dr. Stanislaus is that my father was a dentist as well, and he still practices in North Carolina. And I did go work in his office growing up, but I was always able to choose my job. And just thinking about dentistry in the early 80s, it just was a very different profession. And so I didn't like the smell of the dental offices. I didn't like the sounds. And so the job that I actually chose was landscaping the outside of his office. And
wow.
So for years I took care of the juniper, and I planted the trees that have now grown, picked up the trash, just because I didn't want to set foot in that dental office. So I was interested in biology. I majored in biology at the University of North Carolina. And I guess for me it was very much a last-minute decision. I tried a couple of things that just weren't quite right. And somehow using this biology degree, I ended up in dental school. And as a last-minute decision, it was actually one of the best decisions I've ever made, just because practicing modern dentistry is an incredible way to spend a day. There's so much technology, there's so much art, and just the human aspect of it as well. You get to just interact with such interesting people. All of us practice here in New York, such fantastic people we deal with on a daily basis, and it's really incredible.
Wow. So. And all three of you are incredible doctors. One of the things that stands out for me is when a doctor can make you comfortable. And I know with Dr. Stanislaus, and I've met the other, you know, two of you as well, and your dispositions are just very calming, very cooling. Is that something that they teach you guys in dental school, or is that just a part of your DNA?
I think it's more part of the people that we are, because, you know, I think the main, what comes across, I think, with myself, with Dr. Reed and Dr. Goss, is that we just enjoy people. We enjoy getting to know people, and we just have a genuine concern for people, not only their dental needs, but just as a friend. Like, in fact, I would say a lot of my patients become my friends, because I just enjoy their company, enjoy the kind of people they are. So I don't know if it's they really don't teach that in dental school. At least it's something that most of the courses in dental school were basically the sciences and dentistry, and a lot of the practice management and patient management skills that I think that I have attained, as well as I'm sure Dr. Goss and Dr. Reed, I think really a reflection of our upbringing, and from that, I just think the natural interest in people develops.
I think that they really try to select for that, you know, when you go through the interview process and so forth. Like, this is definitely a profession where you have to care about people, and it's not something that you can fake. So they really try to weed out those people.
And just to add to that, I definitely agree with what you both have said, but in terms of it being something that's just kind of there in your personality type. But one thing that I will say, and one example comes to mind, is also you have great mentors that kind of impact who you are and who you become as a dentist. And there's a very striking example that comes to mind. Dr. Stanislaus is one of my greatest mentors in dentistry, and the story is that he has this amazing technique. When he gives a patient an injection, which no patient really likes, many times, you know, he'll like delicately apologize for the slight discomfort that they'll feel.
Yes, he does.
And
I can attest to that.
And in my training, I was my oral surgery training, one of the people that trained me was a guy who's a great surgeon named Dr. Reed at Howard University. And, you know, one of the things that he was trained on is to never apologize. And there was an example of someone that just dropped a cotton roll in the operatory with the patient and apologized, and the patient didn't know what the doctor was apologizing for and got incredibly nervous. So, you know, I was trained to never apologize. But then after seeing kind of the way Dr. Stanislaus would give a needle and kind of watching and watching and even not really accepting it the first time, but seeing over years, I find myself taking on some of the things that you see that people that have been practicing a little bit longer than you or even significantly longer than you do that just really, really work and really increase the level of your care that you're able to deliver. So.
I agree with that. I mean, that's of major importance to me when I'm sitting in that chair, you know, when I'm being stuck with that huge needle and the person is...
It's not huge.
It sure looks long. I got to tell you that much, you know. And it's just very calming to know that the person is somewhat empathetic towards you, and you know they understand your pain. Let's go through you know dentistry a little bit, and you know what the types of services that you guys offer. Can someone just give me a definition of what dentistry is? Any one of you can take that.
Well, why don't we let Gene, who's been practicing the longest, define it?
Thanks, Lisa. I think I would just have to say that, you know, dentistry is really the treatment of the soft tissue, the gums, the bones, the bone that supports the teeth, as well as treating the teeth with respects to having patients maintain, I guess, what would be considered adequate function and, I guess, optimum aesthetics. But with that being said, now in dentistry, I think a lot of literature suggests, and I think it's very clear to all of us, that what's going on in your mouth can be an indication of what's going on in the body. So as dentists now, I think that more so than... Now, first of all, I want to say, Neil, as dentists, I'm sure Dr. Gauze and Dr. Reed will agree with me, you know, we definitely want our patients to know that we're treating human beings and not teeth. So we have to be very mindful of the significance of diseases like diabetes, susceptibility to stroke, premature babies, and short-term pregnancies. There are a lot of there's a lot of literature now that's really finding a correlation between, say, periodontal disease and diabetes, periodontal disease and susceptibility to stroke, periodontal disease and kidney problems. So, like I said, you know, dentistry, certainly our focus is the oral cavity, but like I said, there are a lot of medical concerns that are a lot of times manifested in the mouth first. So I guess you could give a more lofty description of what dentistry actually means, Dr. Reed.
What was that?
I said, I'm sure you can give a more definitive and lofty description of what dentistry actually is. Since you put me on the spot to go first.
No, that was extremely comprehensive. But, I would definitely say that, especially within this century, and I guess I can really only speak about dentistry in this century, but there really has been, like, a focus on the oral cavity as being, like, an organ, you know, part of the entire body. So we're not just looking at teeth in isolation, but definitely, like, the entire complex and how that serves, like, the entire body and so forth. And I mean, you know, patients that, like, they've found correlations between patients that have limited numbers of teeth and their overall nutritional, like, intake and overall health based on that. So it's definitely a very important organ.
Yeah. Now, sort of piggybacking on that, and it's interesting that you said you're treating people and not teeth, and you brought up things like diabetes and women who could be pregnant. What is the process, or do you in your practices, do you treat people with physical handicaps and say, HIV, AIDS, autism, children with special needs, people with special needs? Is that something that is relegated to a dentist with specialties, or is it just a matter of whether you feel comfortable or not being able to treat those types of patients effectively?
Well, as dentists, like you mentioned, HIV or AIDS, in dentistry, we practice universal precautions. So with that being said, treating an HIV patient is no different than treating a patient who may be totally healthy, because, we don't make distinctions, because, first of all, some patients certainly inform us that they have AIDS. Other patients may not even know it. So that's why we just practice universal precautions. And I just think that's, anything that Dr. Goss is my dentist, and anything that he does in my office is the same thing that I do on patients. I don't take any special precautions, because he's treating me, like I said, just with universal precautions. I think that will should alleviate any fears that people have about the spread of infection in dental offices.
Right. And, Neil, I think this is a good time to say that there are different types of dentists within our profession. I'm a general dentist, but there are specialists. And sometimes I like to think of the general dentist as maybe a quarterback. And you mentioned patients that may have autism, or pediatric patients, or patients with some special needs. I guess the first thought would be the general dentist, but I guess an obligation of a general dentist is that if you feel that your patient would have a higher level of care with a specialist, then you would then send that patient to be treated by somebody that could deliver a higher level of care than you could get for them. But I think as a GP, we strive to provide the highest level of care that we can for everybody. But generally speaking, in my practice, for example, I do feel that children would probably receive a higher level of care in the colleague's office that has dedicated their practice to just treating children.
Okay.
They may have the toys, and they may be able to sedate them, and a lot of different things that I might not be able to do. As a GP, we're kind of the one-stop shop, but there are many specialists that are great adjuncts to the field of dentistry.
Now, do all of you three consider yourselves general practitioners, Dr. Stanislaus and Dr. Reed?
Well, I am trained as a prosthodontist, but I do practice general dentistry. The reason that I chose to specialize in that field was just because I wanted to get a broader knowledge of the areas that pertain to that specialty, things such as crowns and bridges and implants and, cosmetic dentistry and that sort of thing. But no, I do practice general dentistry.
Give us a definition of prosthodontics.
A prosthodontist is someone that specializes in the aesthetic restoration and replacement of teeth. So Someone that completes 3 additional years of training after dental school, and they get really intensive lectures and clinical experience and things like dental implants, crowns, bridges, veneers. We also learn a lot about the temporomandibular joint and disorders associated with that, and sleep disorders and that sort of thing.
Okay. And Dr. Stanislaus?
Yes, I consider them. I'm a general practitioner. But that being said, just over the years, I'm practicing dentistry now for 27 years, and just during the time, first of all, I've had some great mentors. First mentor, my greatest mentor is my father. I'll just make another reference to another mentor of mine, Dr. James Spencer. Those two are probably my biggest mentors in dentistry. And through the knowledge I've gained from observing them as well as continuing education that I've taken, you know, I feel that I've developed an expertise in, and I think most of the specialties of dentistry, certainly, like Dr. Gore said, children who come to the office, for the most part, I do refer them to a pediatric dentist because, as Dr. Gore said, just the experience would just be probably just more favorable. And the last thing I'd want to do with a young child is to be the first dentist he sees and causes an uncomfortable experience, which will pretty much follow that patient for the rest of his career. Orthodontics is another specialty that I don't do specific orthodontics. You know, there's a there is a type of adult orthodontics called Invisalign, which I do, but with regards to the other specialties in dentistry, I do consider myself to be highly trained. But with that being said, I'd say there are in that context, there are still some cases, some patients that I do refer out because, as Dr. Gore said, whenever I feel that another dentist could deliver a higher level of care than I can, you know, I certainly would refer because, you know, I guess with everything, it's just good to know your limitations and not allow your ego to cause you to maybe put a patient in a situation that can be handled better by a specialist.
Absolutely. And since we're on that subject, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about exactly what orthodontics is? And as you said, you do sort of practice with the Invisalign. So why don't you make the differentiation for our listeners about that?
Okay. First of all, I do have to make another reference. Pretty much I did take an Invisalign course, but my mentor in Invisalign is Dr. Garz. Dr. Gauz is, right, he's my mentor. In fact, in New York City, I think Dr. Gauz is one of the premier Invisalign dentists with the number of cases he's done, with his expertise. Like I said, he is one of the renowned Invisalign dentists, as well as one of the renowned general dentists in New York City.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Thanks, Jane. It's because of you, buddy. Invisalign is an awesome technology which allows minor tooth movement, and it definitely has many advantages over traditional wrought wire or metal braces. And one large one is aesthetics. Many adults don't want to wear metal braces on their teeth. And about 70% of adults have some form of crowding or spacing that they would like to correct. So Invisalign is a technology that allows a dentist to make a clear sequence of trays called aligners that gradually move the teeth into the right place. In my opinion, Invisalign is quickly becoming the standard of care for minor tooth movement in adults.
Wow. We're at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Neil Blake Online here in Rainbow Soul. We have three wonderful doctors here today. If you just tuned in, we have with us Dr. Eugene Stanislaus, Dr. Lisa Reed, and Dr. Lee Gauz on the phone with me. Let me ask you this. On some dentists, I see DDS. I see some that have DMD. Can someone explain to me what those two abbreviations are for?
There's no difference in the two. DMD stands for Doctor of Dental Medicine, and DDS stands for Doctor of Dental Surgery. And it just has to do with the school that you went to and when that school was founded, I guess. Correct me if I'm wrong, Gene or Lee, over others, but there's really no differentiation in terms of abilities and qualifications and so forth.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's, I think the older degree was the DDS. Dr. Reed is absolutely correct in stating that there's no difference in the services that a DDS would provide versus a DMD, but I think maybe as the profession of dentistry is constantly evolving, dentistry is becoming accepted as a branch of medicine that's related to diagnosis and prevention and treatment of diseases in the oral cavity of your mouth. So the DMD came about as dentistry became more, I guess, just a branch of medicine.
Oh, okay. We have a caller on the line. I'm not sure that they want to ask a question or not, but we have a caller, 6265. Would you like to ask a question? 6265, you're live on the air. State your name, where you're calling from, if you'd like to ask a question. Okay, I guess they're just listening. They're not interested in answering questions. Let me ask you this. I talked about how I didn't want to get my root canal. How do you guys deal with dental phobias? You know, are you guys trained with relaxation techniques? Because I know when I was a kid, when I went to the dentist, I always got this laughing gas. I guess that's called nitrous oxide or whatever. But I used to get that, and I noticed that, you know, I've never that's not even offered at Dr. Stanislaus's office. And other people that I talk to, it seems as though dentists have gotten away from that. Do dentists still use, you know, the I called it laughing gas, but do people still use the gas to sedate patients?
Sure, Neil.
they do. You know, we do like to sort of try and talk to the patient and try and put them at ease before we employ other methods such as laughing gas. By the way, laughing gas is offered at Dr. Stanislaus' practice. So
what happened? How come you never offered it to me?
Well, you see, wait a second. Now, Neil, I know that you're holistic. I know that you're so health conscious. I don't want to put anything into your lungs that's not like pure air, you know? So that's why I've never offered it to you. But also, you know, Neil is a great patient. And like I said, the only reason I don't offer it to Neil is, like I said, I know he's very health conscious, and I just don't want to do anything that's going to in any way compromise him. Because nitrous oxide, it's just mood altering. It's a kind of an anti-anxiety medication. And you know, Neil, even though you've never really expressed the need for it, next time you come, I'm going to just load it up and give it to you. Whether you need it, even if it's just for cleaning, even if it's just for consultation.
I'll tell you an interesting story about it. I was a kid. I must have been maybe fourth grade or whatever. And the dentist that we used to go to out in Flatlands, I forget his name. I think he's since passed. But he gave me the gas. And I got to tell you, that was the first time in my life that I was actually high. And when I was like I didn't even know what it was. But what happened was I came home and I told my mother and father that I was seeing five dentists working on me. So when I got older, I realized what had happened. I think the nitrous oxide acted like a drug. It made me high. It was a great feeling. I mean, I loved it. I didn't feel the needles or anything like that. It's actually a really great feeling. But I realized that that's what it is. Now, is that typically how it should affect a child or a younger patient or an adult? I mean, what is, you know, supposed to go on when you actually take the gas?
Well, nitrous oxide is it's an anxiolytic, which means it gets rid of anxiety. So it's used for children, which tend to fear the unknown, the dentist being an experience which they're definitely not familiar with and may be predisposed to not like by having their immunizations and other experiences with needles that make them just completely not in the mood for anything that has to do with any needles. But nitrous oxide also has a great application with adults that have had traumatic experiences as kids because then as a protective mechanism, they have a very real phobia of dentists. So many patients think that nitrous oxide makes the needle hurt less, and that's actually not so much true. The pain sensations are still there, but it does alter the mood and make them less anxious for the experience.
Okay. Yeah.
I do have to say that a lot of patients that have come into, you know, our practice requesting nitrous, and, you know, and they've had it, subsequently, like, you know, they've continued to be patients and have actually sort of, like, weaned and gotten away from using the nitrous. And I think it's the point that you made at the beginning of the program where you talked about feeling really, really comfortable in your environment. Like, I think that, that just makes the, you know, the biggest difference in terms of being able to tolerate coming to the dentist and dental procedures and so forth.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It definitely makes a difference. We're quickly running out of time here. We've got about 24 minutes of show. We're always rushing to get off air. So what I'd like you guys to do, and we'll do it again at the end of the show, but I'd like each one of you to go around and give out your phone number, your website, you know, where you're practicing, you know, how folks can get in touch with you. So at least we can get that in at least once, you know, before we're crashing off the air. I'll start with you, Dr. Stanislaus.
Once again, as Neil said, my name is Eugene Stanislaus. I practice in Brooklyn Heights at 189 Montague Street between Court Street and Clinton. We're in Suite 800B. Our phone number is 718-857-6639. And I'd love for you all to visit us on our website, www.brooklynheightsdental.com.
Go ahead, Dr. Reed. I'm also practicing with Dr. Stanislaus. So, again, our address is 189 Montague. It's between Court and Clinton in downtown Brooklyn. And we're Suite 800B, 718-857-6639.
And Dr. Goss?
I'm practicing on 57th Street in Manhattan between 5th and 6th. And my telephone number is 212-421-3418, and my website is smiledesignmanhattan.com.
Okay, excellent.
You know, Neil,
if
I could just make a comment about Dr. Gauze and Dr. Reed. You know, I've had the privilege of having two of the finest young doctors work with me, and two of the finest people and two of the finest young doctors.
Wow.
Great clinicians and great human beings, but and very, very bright. When Dr. Gauze first came to my office in 2007, I didn't even have a website, and I didn't know anything about internet marketing. And Dr. Gauze certainly one of the contributions to my practice, as well as, even though Dr. Gauze is considerably younger than I am, even just through his clinical skills, learned a lot from him. And like you said, and I'm his mentor, like I said, with Invisalign and other areas, he's taught me a lot. And the same with Dr. Reed. Dr. Reed's a very, very bright, very, very tremendous clinician. And I've learned a lot from Dr. Reed, being a specialist as a prosthodontist. So I've really been privileged to have both these fine human beings and fine dentists work with me.
Wow.
Thanks so much, Gene.
Definitely works both ways.
Yeah, exactly. I know, I actually need to thank Dr. Gauze for introducing me to Dr. Stanislaus, giving me the opportunity to, you know, be part of his team. And, you know, when we talk about mentors and identify mentors, you know, throughout our career, and, at the beginning, I was fortunate enough to go to a dental school where I had a black dean, and so he sort of mentored me through that time. And during my residency, I was able to identify some great mentors as well. But in terms of, you know, coming out and going into private practice and, you know, sort of having, like, no clue what to do, Dr. Stanislaus has just been amazing. It's just been such a pleasure to work with him and observe him as he works with his patients and interacts with his patients. I've just learned so much from him.
Wow.
I mean, this is someone who, no matter what sort of day he's having, his patients are never aware. He always has a smile, he's always upbeat, you know, always ready to put his patients first. So.
You know what I love about Dr. Stanza? You know, when he's sticking that huge needle in you, he's going, sorry, buddy, 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 sorry, buddy, sorry, buddy. and I love that because it really... It just brings a smile to my face. We've got about 20 minutes left. I got a lot of questions for you guys.
Neil,
we're going to take a short break. Go ahead.
Just about the whole thing, we were talking about how we just learn so much from each other. When I remember when I started working for Dr. Stanislaus as one of his team members, as an associate dentist in his office, I was saving up for this course called the Las Vegas Institute, which is a big course where they teach you to do porcelain veneers and aesthetic dentistry. And, you know, I was somewhat aware of implant dentistry, but I just had not really been in a practice where I saw its practical application on a daily basis and how it could literally change lives. And because of seeing a few of Dr. Stanislaus's patients that he treated and a procedure that seemed definitely nothing like anything that I saw in dental school, and also with his little push to get involved with the implant program at NYU, I started learning some implant dentistry. So from us as colleagues, you know, we have each other's support, and we're not scared, we're not afraid to learn new things and step outside of the area that we feel most comfortable. So I know, even though I feel very proficient as an implant dentist now, and I'm still involved with NYU and their implant department, I know the greatest thing I have is my cell phone that I can, you know, I can text or I can call Dr. Stanislaus with a clinical question about, you know, a very, very specific sort of a situation, and know that he'll come to the phone and help me deliver the highest quality care for my patient. And then he has the same form of a relationship with one of the greatest implant dentists, Dr. Carl Misch, who actually wrote the textbook on implant dentistry, who actually placed the implants on the Pope. So, you know, dentistry is a huge network, and from having people that that, you know, just in terms of going to the human nature, they want to see the best for you as a person. But then also going to the clinical kind of aspect, they want to see the best for their patients. And those two things working together just make it so that we all love practicing dentistry so much that we love talking about it at 10 o'clock at night.
Right. But I need to take a short break here. I want you guys to think about how being African-American has affected your practices and your training, if any. We'd like to enlighten the audience on that as well. But we'll be right back. You're listening to Neil Blake Online here on Rainbow, so we'll be right back after this.
My name is Susan L. Taylor, Editor-in-Chief Emeritus of Essence Magazine. My sadness and depression grew out of giving myself to my career before I would give myself to myself. And then I am out there speaking in front of thousands of people with a smile pasted on my face but dying on the inside. Hiding sadness makes you more and more sad because it closes you off. Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing. We're dying, and the most revolutionary and healing thing that black people can do right now is to love one another.
This is Terry Williams, co-founder of the Stay Strong Foundation. Mental illness is devastating our community, and it's up to us to stop it. It's time for us to wake up, stand up, and speak up. And what I know is, together, we can do this. Search online for stories that heal. We must share ourselves. Healing starts with us. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
We're about 44 minutes after the hour of 10 here on the East Coast. We've got about 15 minutes after the show. You're listening to Neil Blake Online here on Rainbow. So with me today, we're talking about dentistry. Specifically, we have three African-American dentists on the line, Dr. Eugene Stanislaus, Dr. Lisa Reed, and Dr. Lee Gores. Before I forget, as you mentioned before, I'm into holistic healing and living and so on and so forth. And one thing that I love about your practice, Dr. Stanislaus, is that you don't use mercury fillings. Can you guys talk about the difference and the health benefits to not using mercury fillings and white resin fillings as being the better choice, and if dentists are still using those silver mercury fillings anymore?
Well, you know, Neil, with regards to silver fillings, amalgams, you know, I have to say, I don't know of any fairly refereed proof that silver fillings are harmful to the public. I think that we've all heard in the media some of the claims that, you know, patients with multiple sclerosis, doctors claimed that that was possibly due to the silver fillings in their mouth. Those kind of claims, like I said, are not documented. Like I said, it certainly is out there in the public. I think a lot of my desire and not to do silver fillings was cosmetic. The cosmetics of it. You know, silver fillings, I just never liked the way they look. Also, you know, silver fillings are done in a way that actually could weaken teeth with respects to a silver filling. When you bite down on a silver filling, what could happen? It could happen with any filling, but I think even more so with a silver filling is that it could actually wedge in between the walls of the teeth and make those teeth more readily susceptible to fracture, whereas the tooth-colored fillings, they're actually bonded directly to the tooth, whereas, like I said, silver fillings are just held in by, like, literally by mechanical retention. Tooth-colored fillings are actually bonded to the teeth, which I think makes them less susceptible to fracture, and they just offer a much more cosmetic results. In the past, I'd say in the 80s and early 90s, tooth-colored fillings were not, they were not as strong as amalgam fillings, but as we progressed through the 90s and into the 2000s, tooth-colored fillings are as good as silver fillings with respect to wear and function.
Okay. Does anybody else want to add to that?
Well, the other thing that just to piggyback off of what Dr. Stanislaus said in terms of like the strength of the tooth. Traditionally, with the silver color fillings, in order to you had a cavity or like a, you know, basically a hole in your tooth. In order to fill that cavity, you had to sort of make it much bigger in order to get the silver filling in. Nowadays, you can be very, very conservative with removal of like the infected tooth structure and just replacing a smaller area with the tooth color filling material. So it's much more conservative tooth structure, which then also helps increase like the strength and so forth of the tooth.
Oh, okay. There's so many procedures. You know, there's laser, there's tooth whitening. I'm going to try to get to a couple of these things before we get off the air. We have about 11 minutes left. Any one of you can take the stage here. Just explain to the audience what is actually being done when a filling is being, done in the office, because there's all this drilling going on. There's water splashing up over the place. You know, explain to the audience what is actually being done when someone has a cavity and you're filling that cavity.
I guess I can, turn.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
So, first of all, what is a cavity? A cavity, it refers to whenever someone has a part of their tooth that's infected with bacteria and where the enamel or even the layer under the enamel called dentin becomes weak. even so weak that with just a dental instrument, you can often just flake a portion of that tooth away. That bacteria is a living process that's headed towards the nerve of the tooth. And many times that can end up as the procedure called a root canal, which, although you experienced, is not that bad anymore. We still want to prevent any form of root canal that we can. So if a person comes into one of our offices with a hole in their tooth or bacteria in the tooth or infected tooth structure, we get them numb so that they're comfortable while we work, and then we remove the infected portion of the tooth. And the most important thing is that we get down to good, clean margins of the tooth, and then we put in the restorative material that we select. So many times that would be composite resin or a porcelain material, and this restores that tooth to its ideal form, and more importantly, its ideal function.
Okay. Now, what's actually happening when you guys are doing all of that drilling into the tooth? What's going on when that's happening?
We're actually removing the infected portion of the tooth.
I
got
you.
If you imagine you have grooves on your teeth, and you eat a Swedish fish that gets stuck there, and over time you're having your Swedish fish after lunch every day, and you have the sugar that feeds the bacteria in that groove of that tooth, and that portion of the tooth becomes sick. We'll remove that portion of the tooth and replace it with a bonded resin that makes the tooth beautiful and healthy and hard again.
Okay, so that's what so one of the other doctors, you can take this question. So what is the difference between a regular filling and a root canal?
So a regular filling is when the cavity has not sort of entered the pulp chamber, and the pulp chamber is what houses the nerves. So if you kind of remember what Dr. Gaj just said about the infected tooth material, once the bacteria hits that, hits the nerve, obviously, you know, the nerve becomes very inflamed. We call that pulpitis. And the root canal is a process of removing the inflamed nerves so that whatever discomfort you're feeling is alleviated.
Okay.
Now, but the thing is, the process of root canal, though, is that, you know, you have to remove so much of the internal structure of the tooth to access the pulp and remove the nerve tissue, that the tooth becomes very brittle and weak. And so once a root canal has taken place, you almost always need to have some sort of restoration that covers the entire biting surface of the tooth so that it doesn't fracture and you're able to maintain it long term.
And that would be called a crown, I would guess?
A crown or a sort of a half crown, which is called an onlay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Hey,
we're running out of time.
While you're asking these questions and making these points, I noticed that maybe we were getting a little low on time. And I think one point that is important to make is the relationship or how dentistry is unique for populations of color.
Yes, absolutely.
Disease processes are different, and this is a medically known fact that, you know, every population is subject to different levels of different ailments. For example, populations of color experience more cardiovascular disease than other communities. And there was actually a Surgeon General's report a few years ago that spoke on how dental disease is different in communities of color and also with respect to socioeconomic levels in this country. So Dr. Stanislaus was mentioning the correlation that was found between periodontal disease and diabetes and heart disease. Gene, is that the exact study that you were saying?
Sure, right, yes.
Can you back me up there with how those things are related and how we as clinicians can help our patients have better overall health? Because I know you do the periolase procedure.
Dr. Gauze brought up the a laser that we use for treating periodontal disease. It's a procedure which is called LINAP. It's laser-assisted new attachment procedure. It's a use of a laser to treat. It's a use of a laser as an alternative to the treatment of moderate to severe periodontal disease, which used to conventionally was treated through periodontal surgery. But I'm going to focus on more what Dr. Gauze was saying about periodontal disease being a major contributor to specifically diabetics who have periodontal disease have a much more difficult time maintaining their diabetes than a diabetic who does not have periodontal disease. And by the same token, diabetics with uncontrolled, patients with uncontrolled diabetes have a greater susceptibility to periodontal disease, as well as patients, like I said, whose diabetes is not under control, they have a greater amount of periodontal disease. So those okay. are there's some definite correlations between periodontal disease and other areas throughout the body.
Okay.
And there's also, Dr. Santos also alluded to this earlier when he mentioned that periodontal disease may also be associated with preterm labor and low birth weight in pregnant women. So something to take into consideration.
And then all
as well.
Of these things affect our community, you know. So just
Absolutely.
In terms of us being kind of healthier people in this country, dentistry definitely is one way that we can help our community just have healthier lives in general.
Absolutely, through great doctors and great teaching. I want to ask you a question while we're live on the air. We may go a little over. The live audience won't hear us after a bit, but it will be available for download. We got about 2 minutes left. I just wanted to address the fact that you guys are dentists who just happen to be African American. Are there any stories that you can tell me that you went through that you feel were different than other ethnicities might have gone through in terms of your education, how you were received, and in terms of what patients decide to patronize your practice? Start with you, Dr. Gauze.
I have a unique experience in that I did undergrad at University of North Carolina, and then I did dental school at Howard University. So just in terms of the demographic, kind of I had a flip-flop. So I was able to experience kind of education in two different forms, and they're both fantastic. I mean, and I'm blessed enough to be kind of starting my practice at a time where dentistry is at a fantastic point or pinnacle, and just like the exciting things on the horizon for this profession. We can't even imagine how great dentistry will be another 10 years from now. But I'm also at the point where, I've been exposed to many, many of the top healthcare providers in this country who happen to be black, like Dr. Stanislaus. So, my practice, as I will put myself in the ring with any young clinician out there, I definitely feel like I'm the best. I take care of all of my patients without respect to race, creed, or color, or origin, and just really happy to kind of reach back to Charles Drew and try and be inspired by him and just try to be the best. And
absolutely.
And to just kind of think things out together. And push our profession forward as a whole. So Let me just say this real quick.
Hold on 1 second, Lee, Dr. Gauss, because we have 30 seconds left. We're going to continue the conversation. To all the listeners, you're going to get cut off, but you will be able to download the program and you will be able to hear this program in its entirety. We have so much information, so we're going to probably stay on for about another 15 minutes or so. Go ahead, Dr. Gauss. Sorry to cut you off there. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I guess the point I was making is that of course, we know race matters in this country. It just does. It's a fact. People still notice race. And also, with respect to healthcare, many times healthcare also is divided according to race. And the best example of that is probably you can just look at some of our hospitals, even here in New York. And you'll have some hospitals that have X population and some hospitals that treat Y population, some that have a certain religious patient pool. And, you know, I don't know if I have enough of a sociology background to even understand some of that stuff. And I just want to be the best. You know, I just want to be the best. That's all I have to say on that.
I definitely, support Lee's point about, you know, we have the ability to treat all people from all backgrounds and all walks of life. And we enjoy that because as dentists, we enjoy interacting with people, learning about people and so forth. But I do have to say that today I had a doctor's appointment. And it was a new doctor that I was going to see. I didn't know anything about the doctor. And when she walked into the room, she was a young, beautiful African-American woman. And the feeling that I got from having her walk into the room today was the feeling that I see in my patients when they walk into the office and they meet Dr. Stanislaus and they meet me. So I think it really, like, you know, says a lot. And we feel really good as a people when we see, like, people that look just like us are treating us and having our best interests at heart and going to try every single, you know, therapy at their disposal to help us out. So I think that makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. Dr. Stanislaus?
You know, Neil, I went to State University at Stony Brook School of Dental Medicine. I started in 1980 and graduated in 84. You know, there were 27 students in the class, and I was the only African-American male in the class. It was an African-American female, good friend of mine, Dr. Sylvia Rice, fantastic dentist. She's full-time faculty at Stony Brook right now. But, you know, Neil, I would have to say, when I was at Stony Brook, there may have been some subtle issues of race that I may have encountered. But I have to say, for the most part, the instructors there treated me fairly. For the most part, was never made to feel uncomfortable. And so I have to give a lot of, I just have a lot of admiration for the faculty at Stony Brook, for the education they gave me, and for the, I guess, the environment that I experienced, you know, as an African-American in a predominantly white school. In fact, when I first went there, I think Dr. Rice and I were the only two African Americans in the whole school of 108.
Wow.
So I was very fortunate. And you know, like Dr. Gauss and like Dr. Reed says, you know, we just want to be the best. We just want to be the best dentist, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, regardless, we don't want to be the best black dentist. We just want to be the best dentist. And myself, and as an experience, you know, my name is Eugene Stanislaus. So it's rough on both sides. Sometimes an African-American patient would come in. I'd say, hi, I'm Eugene Stanislaus. They'd say, you're Eugene Stanislaus? You're Eugene Stanislaus? So, but and on the same, on the other side, some Caucasians, Asians come in to the office, and they say, you're Dr. Stanislaus? So, you know, it works both ways, but with the population in New York City today, you know, when people come in and see I'm Dr. Stanislaus, be it people of color or not, I think the things that I try to project is just you know, just my desire to help people, my desire to interact with people, and I think just my motivation just to be the best dentist and the best person I can.
Absolutely. And I agree with that. It's just that, you know, I just think that, you know, particularly on a program like that, you know, we need to address it. And one of the reasons why, you know, race has to be addressed, in my opinion, is because from the grassroots level, and the real reason why I'm asking those questions is because of course, you're going to want patients from every ethnicity. I mean, that just makes sense because, like you said, it's not about you being a black doctor, an African-American doctor. It's about you being a qualified doctor. It's about you being an empathetic doctor and a good doctor. However, the folks listening to this program, particularly in our community, we have to support our doctors. We have to support our businesses because, you know, we talk about this on Rainbow Soul all the time, folks. You know, when you have a musician, if you, you know, I'm just using Michael Jackson as an example. If he, you know, when he was doing concerts, he's promoting a business. He's hiring PAs. He's hiring lighting directors. He's employing people. And that's what these three doctors here are doing. They are employing people. They are running a business. They have, you know, dental hygienists. They have dental assistants. They have secretaries. They have to bring in, you know, people to deal with the computers and, you know, whatever it is, there is a business that is supporting, you know, this dental practice. And that's one of the things that, you know, we as a community, we have to be cognizant of that. And, yes, I would always say this. There's no reason to go to an inferior store, an inferior doctor, an inferior car dealer, whatever it is. But when you have quality people who are practicing, and we're talking about medicine and dentistry today, when you have qualified doctors and you have qualified dentists, I just think that as a community, you know, because sometimes we can be our own worst enemy as a community. You know, oh, well, this person can't do this, do that. But I think that we owe it to ourselves, and that's why I wanted these doctors on today to let folks know that there are good African-American doctors. And I don't even want to say good. We have excellent, caring doctors that are out there. So I think it's just important to support, and that's just one of the things that I wanted to bring up. One of the most popular treatments out here today is people are interested in keeping their teeth white. Can you guys talk about that, you know, the various different techniques that are being used today to whiten teeth and improve people's smiles? Dr. Boas?
Yeah, sure, I'll be happy to speak on that. Neil, I think you made some great points just now. So just to answer your question, but maybe to come back to the points that you were making.
You can come back to them right now. Go ahead. You can answer it right now. Go ahead.
Sure. I think you're making some very, very great points, and I would like to add one layer to that. Malcolm Gladwell, in one of his books, I can't remember exactly which one of the Gladwell books it was.
The Tipping Point? Tipping Point?
I think maybe it was The Tipping Point. At any rate, it was one where he was talking about how different the experience is for the black patient and for minority patients. I think for black patients with respect to white patients.
Yes.
And, that was in Blank, I think.
I think it was in Blank, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, black patients tend to, and this is from a survey, where they actually looked how people were treated. Black patients tend to ask less questions, tend to challenge their doctors less, and it's cultural based on how healthcare has been delivered and the disparity in care that has been delivered in this country. So, you know, we're now at a point where in our community, some people expect the absolute best of their doctor, and if they're black, then that's just the icing on the cake. But whoever the person is, they want the best. They want the most beautiful crown. They want the most painless procedure. They want the best plastic surgery. They want the best GI surgery, whatever. And we as a people are starting to expect that of our doctors, whereas I don't think it's always been that way. And I don't think all of us in our community have been exposed to the best. So I think that's one thing that my generation has to do for our kids is we have to make, first of all, when our kids go to the doctor, we have to encourage them to ask questions and to understand what's going on and why they're there and why they're getting each form of a treatment and not just accept it as my doctor said I need this, so yes, I need it. And the flip side of that coin is as healthcare professionals, we also have to demand being the best. I have a unique experience, and this just tells you the culture of New York. Prior to meeting Dr. Stanislaus, I worked in two very different communities. I was working on 77th and Park, and I was working in Canarsie, Brooklyn. And we sometimes, black patients have been traumatized by at the hands of their own black healthcare professionals so much that sometimes they're not trusting of their own black doctors.
Yes.
So, you know, and that's up to the black doctors to demonstrate that, you know, we are the Charles Drews of right now, right here and now. And we love delivering the most beautiful, the most painless, the most caring, the most comfortable the care of anybody. And that we're just capable, and this we're just fantastic doctors. So just, I mean, it's exciting to be in the midst of all this change that's going on in healthcare, and look forward to kind of challenging my patients and having them challenge me.
Yes.
And
yes.
Just changing the way that healthcare is delivered in this country.
Absolutely. You know, and people get funny about talking about race and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the thing is that it has to be addressed. You know, it is a reality. And Dr. Stanislaus brought us some really good points, you know, in terms of how it works in reverse. You know, you'll have an African-American come in, and because of our hang-ups, you know, they think that, you know, an African-American can't have a last name of Stanislaus. You know, so, you know, these things, they're real. They're out there, but I think that we, you know, as you know, human beings, and you guys use those words all the time, you know, you're not treating teeth, you're treating human beings. As human beings, you know, we need to work these kinds of things out. We need to, you know, begin to trust each other as a people. You know, other ethnicities, they need to get over their hang-ups as well, you know, and realize that it's about the quality of service. And I can tell you, there's nobody that would come into that office, and I can only speak, you know, for these three doctors, there's no one that would go to any of their practices and say that they would not have a pleasurable experience. You know, their toothache or, you know, whatever's going on in their mouth has nothing to do with the doctors. I mean, you know, we as patients, we bring that on ourselves, either intentionally or unintentionally. But in terms of the service and the respect, and that's what I love about you guys, you know, and ladies too, you know, there's just so much respect, and that's important in terms of trust. But you know, while we're on that, I know we want to talk about the teeth whitening a little bit, but also, you know, in terms of patients, do you feel you guys lose out on a segment of the patient pool base that's out there from other ethnicities because they're just uncomfortable and trusting of having an African-American work on them? And I know that you both have all, you know, all three of you have all ethnicities that come into your office, but do you think that they're, that you notice, or do you feel that, you know, that there's a certain loss in some of the patient pool out there because of, I don't want to use the word racist thoughts. I'll just say that folks have a certain expectation, and whereas in other communities, people do want to give business to their own, that they feel like they don't want to give business to you because you're an African American.
Go ahead, Lee.
I think it has a lot to do with age.
Okay.
In my practice, I can say that, you know, my practice looks a lot like New York when you walk down the sidewalk.
Excellent.
So A lot of patients come to me that I'm often shocked, you know, like, for example, people that are, and I won't call out any one religion, but people that are in very, very, I hate to say it, I'm a bad wordsmith, but very extreme sects of any particular religion.
Okay.
And I'm surprised that they come, but I find that the younger ones do come.
Nice.
Now, I have also had an experience in one of the offices that I worked in prior to Dr. Stanislaus, where I was the only dentist there, and the younger patient was the daughter of a prominent and very, I would say, maybe in his mid-70s, neurosurgeon in the city. She broke her front tooth and needed a procedure that was very straightforward. And when the father found out that I was the doctor that would be treating her, he actually had his daughter leave the office.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, and, you know, it's the procedure that basically anybody that went to dental school could have done. However, my attitude towards that is if somebody doesn't want me for their dentist, then I really don't want them for my patient.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, we also have to know that what we offer is a premium service, and we're happy to offer it to those that want to receive it.
I think instances like that are few and far between.
And that's the only one that's ever happened like that.
Right. And the reason that they are is that people will walk into the office, you know, and they will be surprised to see, in, you know, the case of Dr. Stanislaus and myself, two African-American dentists. But then when they sense our professionalism and just the way the office runs, I think, like, you know, those issues get put aside.
Excellent.
And like Dr. Gore said, I'd say, you know, Neil, if we were practicing, you know, 20, 30 years ago, possibly. But one point I want to make, Neil, is one of my mentors, like I said, my father is my greatest mentor in dentistry. And like I said, my second greatest mentor is Dr. James Spencer. You know, Dr. Spencer had a dental practice since 1960 in Crown Heights. Right on President Street between Kingston and Brooklyn Avenue, and he thrived in that area, which is predominantly a Jewish area. And he thrived.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I think the real point being that patients who come to us, African-American dentists, I think once they, first of all, a lot of patients come from referrals. And I think that patients who are referred, whatever their color, I think, like in Dr. Spencer's case, I think once his reputation got in the community that he was a great dentist, I don't think it mattered because he thrived in an area in 1960 where just the conventional wisdom may have contraindicated his opening up in that area. So, like I said, like Lee and like Lisa has said, I think with today, Lee said pretty much New York City is, you know, all ethnicities, and I think our practices reflect that today.
That's excellent. Let's talk a little about the tooth whitening, because I know people are really interested in that. Talk about the various ways that people can improve and whiten their teeth. Dr. Lisa, go ahead.
There's three options. One is an over-the-counter option, so you can go to your local drugstore and purchase products like Crest White Strips. Then there's two professional whitening options. The first one is basically a take-home kit, so you have trays fabricated that fit your teeth. We provide white, like a gel that's placed in the trays, and you do that like an hour a day for a week to 2 weeks until you achieve your desired results. And then the third option is to have a laser a laser whitening system, and what the laser does is it basically initiates the oxygen radicals that cause the whitening process to occur. So the difference between the three options is they both create results, but the difference is how long it takes to achieve the desired result. So the laser tends to be the most instantaneous, and then the products like Crest White Strips and so forth would take like a much longer time to achieve desirable results.
Okay.
Neil, patients also one of the quickest ways to have whiter, brighter smiles, patients who have discolored teeth or maybe the shape of their teeth, the length, the width. Sometimes patients also just desire whiter teeth and get porcelain veneers. It's another way that people get a whiter, brighter smile, and so that's something that's more of a teeth have to be prepared and reshaped, but porcelain veneers are also a great way to get a whiter, brighter smile.
Okay. Well, we're going to wrap up the show. Before I let the three of you go, and it's been a wonderful conversation, I want each of you to talk about some things that are very dear to you, and it could be anything, how you want to treat patients, how you want the future to be. I want to start with Dr. Lee Gause. Talk a little bit about your nonprofit organization that's providing free dental care to people in need.
Well, there are a few projects that are going on that I'm affiliated with in some form or fashion, just kind of organically. One is my mother's. It's the George Steins Foundation. And she's incredible in that she's almost, in a very short period of time, she's helping to rebuild and modernize the dental school in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. So she's installed 30 dental chairs, digital x-rays, and a technique lab, which is where people that are being trained to be dentists do procedures on mannequins with teeth before you ever do a procedure on a patient. So, that project is something that they are actually, the Haitian dental students are treating Haitian people just like we treat people at NYU Dental School or at Stony Brook or at Howard, and doing a great service for the people that are there and also training new dentists. So that's probably the greatest project that's going on, but...
That's incredible.
And I'll just leave it with that.
Wow. Dr. Reed, I know that you do lecturing, and just talk a little bit about some of the things that are exciting you in terms of your practice at this point.
The new technology that, just in terms of where the field is going is really exciting. There's a big push towards digital dentistry. So, before traditionally patients would come in and say they needed to have like a crown or a veneer or any sort of extensive restoration like that, they would have to come in, have the tooth prepared, have an impression made, and that would get sent to a lab, and then the lab would send back the product, the patient would come back in, and the crown would be cemented in. But nowadays, with digital dentistry, we're able to work on the patient and deliver the finished product in one day. So we're able to make preparations on the teeth, use an optical camera to record an optical image, which is then translated to a computer program, and we're able to design restorations in just a few hours, or actually even a few minutes. So that's really exciting in terms of the technology about where the field is going.
Excellent. Dr. Stanislaus?
Neil, with things that Dr. Gore said and Dr. Reed, those are all great areas, for with respect to just trying to give back. I think we all give back with respect to the way we treat our patients and also
I guess on occasion, just try to help our patients out with respects to, lowering our fees just for patients who are in need. You know, it's something that you have to be careful in doing because, you know, people may not always be sincere, but I think whenever someone needs the benefit of the doubt, it's something I know that I do, Dr. Reed does, Dr. Gauss does. And just in giving back, taught at Long Island College Hospital Department of Dentistry for 25 years.
Wow.
Taken a little bit of a hiatus, but used to enjoy just having a chance to go into the hospital, help young dentists become better dentists. And that's always great. You know, sometimes even some residents still keep in touch, and they say, you know, that Stanislaus, you know, had a great impact on me when I was at the hospital. You were someone we could come to without feeling ashamed of any mistakes I may have made. And I tell them, I say, you know, experience is in making a mistake and knowing how to correct it. That's a big part of experience. It's, you know, with the successes that we have, sure, you gain experience and repetition, but I think that another part of experience is really knowing how to treat complications. And so through going to the dental school, to the hospital, got a great deal of joy out of that. For probably 1984 to probably 1998, I used to treat children from the Brooklyn Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. It was great. Used to do Wednesdays. I used to treat the patients for, you know, maybe for fees that some of the state-assisted programs were paying. But again, one or two of those children who, that was a great organization, it was for children who were abused solely, be it sexually, physically, particularly females, and it was a great program for those students who stayed. They got housing, they got schooling. When they went to college, they could go to the college of their choice through the funding of that foundation. And some of their students have actually called me again and just have told me, maybe now, 20 years later, that just, you know, through meeting me and through the treatment I did and the concern that I showed, they said that that's benefited them progressing through life.
Wow, that's excellent.
I would just like to add that I think all of us have a pretty open door policy with respect to, like, you know, younger people that are interested in getting into the field want to come and observe and shadow and kind of get some more exposure that way. You know, we're always happy to open our doors to those individuals.
Wow. You hear that, everybody in the New York area. You know, you can call and they'll talk to you and help and try to guide you in your career. We've had an incredible show. We actually lost Dr. Gauss. He dropped off. I don't know what happened. But what I'd like for you guys to do real quickly is to give your phone numbers real quickly, just kind of go through what you do, what the patients can expect, and how they can reach you and where you're located. We'll start with you, Dr. Reed.
So I'm, again, located at 189 Montague. It's between Court and Clinton in downtown Brooklyn. We're accessible by all the major, all the subways. The telephone number is 718-857-6639. And we always, you know, we always like to welcome new patients to the office and just sit down with them and talk with them about their, you know, their needs, their desires, and their treatment goals, and let them evaluate us and see if it's an environment that they feel comfortable in. And if so, you know, we can get started.
Excellent. And Dr. Stanislaus?
You know, same address as Dr. Reed, the information she gave out. Like I said, I'd love for you guys to visit our website at www.brooklynheightsdental.com. Here at our practice, our goal is to not only meet our patients' expectations, but to exceed them. And I think when you come, you'll see that that is our goal. And just like Dr. Reed said, if there are any teenagers, adults who are considering dentistry as a career. You have our phone number. You can contact us through our website. We're always very happy to help those who may look at dentistry as a career, but not only just as a career, but we're just interested in just being a good role model for people of all races, creeds, colors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you guys are that. Let me just give Dr. Gauze's information. We lost him. It's Smile Design Manhattan. They're located at 24 West 57th Street in Manhattan, Suite 507. And Dr. Gauze can be reached at 212-421-3418. And his website is smiledesignmanhattan.com. It's been a pleasure having all of you on the program. Your final thoughts before we end the broadcast. Start with you, Dr. Reed.
I would just like, you know, again, to urge everyone, you know, even if it's not us, just, you know, go and have a dental checkup and evaluation. We hope that it would be us, but, you know, just sort of make a commitment to a good oral health.
And Dr. Stanislaus?
You know, we spent so much time talking about what we do. One thing I really have to acknowledge, and I wish I would have acknowledged it earlier, one of the greatest aspects of our practice is our staff. And that's one thing I really wish I would have intimated earlier in the conversation, that we have the practice that we have. I know we're all great dentists, all competent dentists. But you know what? Without the help of our staff, I don't think we'd have the practices that we have, because our staff contributes a lot to the warmth that you'll feel when you enter this practice, and just their competence and they're all bright, very dedicated people, from our assistants to our hygienists to our front desk. I just really want to give a real shout out to all of them.
And they'll all hear it, because we have so many people who will be downloading this program for many years to come. Before we wrap up, how often should a patient get a cleaning, and how important is flossing in conjunction with brushing your teeth?
I'd say that the recommendation for the minimum cleanings, or the minimum visits that any patient should have to their dentist, is two. That's the minimum. Patients who have good oral health, good oral hygiene, may require two cleanings a year. However, Neil, one of the largest diseases, probably the largest disease in dentistry, second only to tooth decay, is periodontal disease. And a lot of patients have periodontal disease and don't even know it. You know, certainly there's some symptoms that people will see, red bleeding gums, loose teeth, bad breath, but also periodontal disease occurs without any symptoms. So very important for all patients to come at least twice a year. And for those patients who have been in this practice and have been diagnosed with periodontal disease, we want to see those patients four times a year. So we want them to come for their checkups and cleanings every 3 months.
Okay.
And flossing, certainly flossing is of paramount importance. Our toothbrushing is a very effective way to remove plaque and tartar from the accessible surfaces of the teeth, but the area in between the teeth that are not accessible to toothbrushing, that's what makes flossing of paramount importance, because a lot of cavities tend to occur in between the teeth, and definitely periodontal disease, for the most part, begins in between the teeth, the soft tissue as well as the bone in between the teeth. As bacteria present in plaque accumulate, it will cause an inflammatory response, which will cause breakdown to the gum tissue as well as the underlying bone.
Okay, okay. And before we wrap up, you mentioned something about bad breath. What's the official name for bad? Is it halitosis for bad breath?
Halitosis,
absolutely.
Yes.
Halitosis. And is that usually an indication that it is an oral issue, or is it predominantly because something else is going on in the body?
You know, Neil, I would say a lot of halitosis is due to the condition of the mouth. You know, bacteria present in plaque, if it's allowed to accumulate, will cause halitosis. There are some gastrointestinal problems that will also cause halitosis. Patients with esophageal reflux also suffer with halitosis. So it's but I would say a person with halitosis, I would say the first area you should investigate is the oral cavity. Make sure you go to the dentist, have frequent cleanings. Also, tongue brushing is also of very great importance with respect to the control of halitosis.
Oh, okay. Okay. And I just got an email from Dr. Gauz. He said, sorry, buddy. I love how you guys say buddy. He said the call got dropped, and he couldn't get back in because the show was actually over, even though it's being recorded. But he gives his regards to all the listeners here on Rainbow Soul, and to you, Dr. Stanislaus, and to you, Dr. Reed. It's been a pleasure having you guys. I think the show is very, very informative. I think it's going to bring a lot of insight to our listeners all around the world. Once again, Dr. Lee Gauz, Dr. Lisa Reed, and Dr. Eugene Stanislaus, we really, really appreciate you for stopping by and enlightening our audience this evening.
Well,
thank
by the
you
same
so
token,
much, Neil.
And by the same
thank
token,
you so much
Neil.
For the opportunity.
Yes, I was going to say the same thing. By the same token, Neil, you know, you deserve a great deal of congratulations just for your dedication to our community through forums like this and forums that elder forums that you allow to take place. And I just want to thank you for giving Dr. Reed, Dr. Gauz, and myself an opportunity to express our information on your station. But really, you do a great job, and we're honored. We are all honored that you found us worthy to be guests on your show.
Oh, you're welcome, and I thank you so much for your kind words. This is Neil Blake Online here on Rainbow Soul. Until next time, keep your internet browser locked to BlakeRadio.com.